356,000 babies will be born around the world, 90% of them in the developing world.
Babies, 6 billion.
A struggle for water, food,
and all the children that follow.
Basic education and health care.
This is a vastly bigger baby boom. It's going to define the society of the 21st century.
Continuing our population discussion this morning, the United Nations is expecting a slightly scary arrival on Halloween.
Here's Johnny!
It's not Jack Nicholson from The Shining. It is, according to the United Nations estimates, the day when the 7 billionth person arrives, or the baby that puts us over that 7 billion population mark. How scary is that? Well, planetary scientists and environmentalists have issued all kinds of alarming and dire predictions in the past about the potentially catastrophic consequences of an out-of-control human population. They might not have expected the 7 billion mark to pass so quietly, though. Clearly, humans have made adaptations to accommodate populations of 5, 6, and 7 billion. What lies ahead? We're joined by David Lamb, professor of economics at the University of Michigan and president of the Population Association of America. Professor Lamb, good morning.
Good morning, John.
So what adaptations have we already made to accommodate populations that 20, 30 years ago would have seemed unsustainable?
Well, it's a good question. We've been through an amazing period. If we look at the period from 1960 to 1999, the world went from 3 billion to 6 billion, doubled in absolutely unprecedented time. We'll never do that again. And over that time, we managed to triple food production, grew way faster than population. We've come up with all kinds of innovations. And I think partly because of the pressures of population, that creates a lot of incentives for people to come up with innovations. And so we've done an amazingly good job of getting through a period that was in many ways much more challenging than what lies ahead now that population growth rates are actually declining quite substantially.
I've been thinking about this a lot as we've been discussing this 7 billion number. And you know, I've been noticing how I don't feel particularly crowded, but I also have noticed from the safety here of the industrialized world here in the United States that it is also the case that you know, events that are pretty commonplace to me these days in terms of getting stuck in traffic or obstructions of one kind or another, you know, I can easily see that 10, 15 years ago, I would have been completely outraged by. I can sense that psychologically there's a real elasticity to what I'm willing to tolerate. And I'm wondering if that's sort of scaled up to the entire population of the world, all kinds of things are possible.
Well, I'm sure that's true. We've all gotten used to living in a more crowded planet, especially going through this big period of growth that we just had, and there has been a lot of adaptations. And you know, most of the extra people that we now have live in cities, so your experience of crowded traffic is common around the world. It's actually, I think, one of the good adaptations is that, you know, this extra 4 billion that we've added since 1960, they're mostly in cities. You know, they're not out in the countryside. The cities have grown a lot. Cities are very resilient. Cities are very efficient, you know, amazing places that are able to absorb a lot of people, though it means getting stuck in traffic a lot.
Well, it means some other things as well, and we should talk about that. We're talking with David Lamb, professor of economics at the University of Michigan. Rem Koolhaas describes, and it's been a very controversial statement, but the architect Rem Koolhaas describes how in places like Lagos, Nigeria, where there are huge slums, and Rio in Brazil would also be an example, that you find resilient adaptations and sort of mercantile capitalism on the fringe that it may not improve the quality of life in a way that we would find acceptable in the industrialized world, but does constitute a way of creating community that proves this point, that cities are resilient. Do you notice these kinds of things?
Yeah, absolutely. I've worked a lot in Brazil, and the slums there are amazing. You know, they seem very scary and unattractive to most of us, and they are in many respects. But those are very resilient places. They're places that people move into from the countryside because they find the life there better. They find the opportunities for their children better. And you go through a period. These cities have grown incredibly. They're now most of them slowing down the growth rate. You know, they go through a period when things are quite unpleasant in them. But you know, eventually, infrastructure gets built, the places get better. I think, you know, most of these cities are gonna have better lives actually in the next 20 years than they've had in the last 20.
Well, what are the things that you worry most about? And then I want to come back to the issue of your experience in Brazil. What are the issues and the shortages that concern you the most?
Well, I do worry a lot about things like feeding all of these people. I think, you know, I worry about it less when I look back and realize, you know, what an amazing job we did in the last 50 years at having food production grow faster than population. So hopefully we can sustain that. One of the points I like to make is that, you know, none of these challenges are easy, and it's not that we should be complacent, and just because we haven't had a mass starvation crisis yet, we shouldn't worry about it for the future. So I think food production is a challenge. I think environmental challenges are even harder because there we don't have markets, we don't have signals, we don't have the kinds of things that have let things like food production work pretty well. You know, nobody has any incentive really to worry about polluting the air and creating global warming. And so I worry a lot about those things where markets don't work and we don't have good signals.
Well, what you're alluding to there, and let's sort of conclude our entire discussion this week on this point, David Lamb, professor of economics at the University of Michigan. You know, what you're talking about is what Paul Ehrlich in his book, The Population Bomb, talked about, you know, years ago when that book was a bestseller, that there's a bomb effect, that there are triggers that or thresholds that we will cross where people stop being resilient and instead they begin to confront the institutions that they believe are causing their quality of life to diminish. You know, what you're seeing in some of these resilient places in Lagos and Rio is that people look like they may have a choice. All right, I can continue to do what I'm doing and I can live a decent life, or I can say, no, I'm fed up and I'm going to, you know, grab a pitchfork and head into the streets. What we're finding is that those triggers that we might have expected to be out there are actually not there. What are the ones that you look at?
Well, I think I think you're absolutely right that people, you know, they are very resilient, they're very creative, they trying to get the best life for themselves and their children. The period that we just came through, you know, put pressures on countries, on the whole world that absolutely unprecedented, and we're never going to see anything like that again. And I think it shows, you know, people are just very good at coming up with ways of doing things, keeping moving forward, and, you know, don't actually take to the streets that often. And, you know, for the life of a typical, you asked someone earlier in the week whether the 7 billionth child would be better off than the fifth or sixth. I think they're going to be much better off. I mean, on average, a child born on Monday is going to have a much better life than the children born when we hit 3, 4, 5, 6 billion. And, you know, life is just better if you're in India, China, most of those countries than it was a generation ago. So, you know, why should people be that upset? They're seeing their lives and their lives of their children improve a lot.
A hopeful look at the population as it reaches the 7 billion mark in the world. David Lamb, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
David Lamb is professor of economics at the University of Michigan, concluding our discussion all this week of the 7 billionth human, the population threshold reached, according to the United Nations, on Halloween.
And some people are scared by that number. Some people are just scared by the more conventional fictional stories like movies. We've been asking you, what scary movies have made you want to leave the theater? We got this call from Massachusetts.
Yeah, scary movies. Blue Velvet. Came home shaking. And repeating that line that it's only a movie, it's only a...
We should mention that our morning producer Leo says the first movie that scared him was Ghostbusters 2.
It's a comedy.
Two. I pretended I had to go to the bathroom when they were about to put baby Oscar into the bath of green slime. It was terrifying.
It's a comedy, Leo.
Not to Leo.
Does Jerry Lewis scare you too?
Give us what movie, tell us what movie scared you,
Elmo
or add to
me.
Our Halloween playlist at 8778-MY-TAKE. I'm Celeste Headlee.
Elmo is scary, actually. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
Elmo's not scary.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.